Do you like a good scare? Do you have a dark and disturbing imagination? Then you've come to the right place. Time Warp Studios proudly presents The Shiver Show. I am your host, Mary LaBrie, here with co-host Greg Flynn.
Good evening, Mary.
Our story for tonight is The Fall of the House of Usher. Greg, any advice for the listener?
Mary, you and I have listened to several Edgar Allan Poe stories on The Shiver Show, but I have an uneasy feeling that The Fall of the House of Usher could be the creepiest one of all.
Buckle up.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the sounds of suspense, to the fear you can hear. Horror that makes the flesh crawl as with maggots, terror that turns the brain to jelly. These mark the work of Edgar Allan Poe. For nearly a century and a half, readers have wondered at the mad creations of his fevered brain, even as their blood ran cold with fear. As shall yours.
It comes.
What comes?
It. Here. It stopped. It stands outside my door.
What stands outside that door?
See.
Ah!
Oh! Good Lord, help us. Please, God, help us.
Our mystery drama, The Fall of the House of Usher, was especially adapted from the Edgar Allan Poe classic for the Mystery Theater by George Lowther and stars Kevin McCarthy. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back with Act One. I must warn you that there lies ahead for you a tale so gruesome that when it ends, you will know beyond doubt that never in your life before have you experienced such revulsion. Are you prepared for this? Come then to a certain room where a man named Gabriel Mannering sits writing in his diary. A certain room in the House of Usher.
I sit here writing this diary, when in truth, were I not a fool, I should have already departed this frightful place. Already I have sensed such horrors in these first hours of my visit that I tremble at the thought of what may be in store for my friend Roderick Usher, and for me. During the whole of this dull, dark autumn day, I had passed on horseback through a singularly dreary tract of country, and at length found myself, as the shades of evening drew on, within a view of this bleak and melancholy house, the House of Usher. I felt at once an iciness, a sickening of my heart, and wondered what it was that so unnerved me. I was soon to find out.
You'd be Mr. Mannering, sir?
Yes.
My master awaits you.
One moment. My horse.
Oh, we'll be well cared for, sir.
Oh, that carriage standing there. That black carriage. Is there another visitor?
Only the doctor. He's attending Miss Madeline. This way, sir.
Thank you.
Follow me now, sir. We turn here, the passage on our left. Now, this to the right.
I had no idea the House of Usher was so vast.
Ah, yes, vast. Above and below.
Below?
There are chambers underground, vaults, dungeons, that even I have never seen, and I have lived here as servant to Mr. Usher more than 30 years. Here we are, sir.
Come.
Mr. Gabriel Mannering, sir.
Oh, Gabriel. My dear good friend, you've come. You've come at last.
Roderick, I came immediately on receipt of your letter. It gave me cause for concern. Deep concern, after all, Roderick. Not having seen each other in years, nor corresponded even, to receive a letter from you was in itself a surprise, but the contents, Roderick, the contents were a shock. How ill are you?
Ill? I'm not ill.
Not ill? But in your letter...
I am not ill! Oh, I may have mentioned something of the sort in my letter, but...
More than mentioned, you spoke of acute bodily illness, of oppressive mental disorder, of a malady, dear friend, so strange you could not bear to face it alone. Now, that is why I'm here. That is why I came at once. A terrible agitation in your letter.
Oh, mood. It was nothing but mood. Mood of the moment. Nothing more.
Come now.
Cato, the port. Good. Thank you. I'll pour. And, Cato.
Sir?
Dr. Wyndham is with my sister still?
Yes, sir.
I would speak with him before he takes his leave if he feels I can bear to...
Sir?
Nothing. Just say I wish to see him.
Yes, sir.
It's a vintage port, Gabriel. You'll enjoy it. It's aroma, its fragrant bouquet will delight your nostrils. Its taste will fall sweet on your tongue. Your health, good friend.
And yours, Roderick.
Well, now, tell me about yourself, Gabriel. How has life gone with you all these years?
Oh, as all lives go, I suppose. There's been the good, the bad, indifference.
Yes, well, mine has been mostly bad.
I've prospered. My importing business in Baton Rouge.
Ruination, that's been my lot, my fate. The fate of the House of Usher.
Well, if you are financially in need...
No. I speak of another kind of ruination. Decadence. I speak of the evil. The evil that molders within my body, my mind, my house. House? Oh, no. No house, this. A tomb. A tomb that houses the living dead.
You are ill.
Yes. Yes, I lied. I am ill with...
What? With what?
With fear.
Fear? Of what?
I know not. What do we all fear, each of us? What living thing has not known fear? It lives within us, this fear. It rots within us, as I rot within this house. But mark you, good friend, whereas with others fear rides like a restless maggot only now and again, with me, it's ever present, a colorless slime growing within me, spreading, engulfing, drowning me.
Roderick.
No. I'm all right now. I'm all right. You must go.
Go?
Well, you shouldn't have come. I shouldn't have asked you. You must leave this house of death, this tomb.
Stop that. Now stop.
I tell you...
Enough. Enough now. Here. Sit down. Compose yourself. Now hear me, Roderick. I came a great distance through the foulest time of the year to be with you, and here I shall stay until you are well again.
You don't understand. I shall never get well.
Of course you will.
No. No, she is dying, you see, and I...
Your sister? Is it she who is dying?
Yes, Madeline.
But it's she who is dying. If it is...
No, you don't understand. You don't understand.
Come in.
Dr. Wyndham.
Come in, Doctor. Thank you, Cato. May I introduce myself, Doctor? Mr. Usher, as you see, is not himself. I'm a friend of his. Gabriel Manning of Baton Rouge.
Oh, how do you know? Louis Wyndham.
I entreat your pardon, both of you.
Shh, now, Roderick.
My nerves sometimes.
Yes, I know, and I'm sure Mr. Mannering understands. You've been taking the laudanum I prescribed?
I used the last only yesterday.
Well, I'll see that you get more.
Oh, thank you. My sister...
There's no change.
How long?
How long?
Before death.
I don't know. Your sister's malady baffles me. I don't know what is killing her, nor do I know what keeps her alive, when in truth, she's all but dead.
Oh, would it be an impertinence, Doctor, for me to ask you what you mean by that?
Well, no, Mr. Mannering. Quite simply, there have been times when Miss Usher, Madeline, has been devoid of all vital signs. And by this, I mean I've been unable at these times to detect a pulse, blood pressure, any respiration whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yet, moments later, she's opened her eyes and returned to the world of the living.
Strange.
Yeah, I've encountered nothing like it in years of practice. It's not too far from the truth to say that she is dead, and yet she lives on.
Yes. Like the house itself.
Now, Roderick, you mustn't harp on...
I tell you, we are like this house, my sister and I. We are this house. The house is us. The house is dead, and yet it stands.
Your aberration about this house...
It is no aberration! It's the truth. The House of Usher crumbles, yet it will not fall. Madeline is dead, yet she will not die. And as for me, oh, heaven, the horror that awaits me.
I'll send the laudanum as soon as possible, Mr. Mannering. There's little else I can do.
Yes.
I have other patients to attend.
Oh, no.
Thank heavens it's a moonlit night. I have many miles to travel. Good night.
Good night. Roderick. Roderick.
Yes?
Roderick, I want to help you in every way I can. That's why I'm here. But now, you must do your part to help yourself.
What do you mean?
Well, I could be wrong, but it seems to me you... let yourself go to pieces all too easily. This talk, this wild talk of your sister Madeline being dead and yet alive. Well, now, that's nonsense, you know.
No.
Yes, well, I'll agree with you with one thing, and one thing only. In a way, you have become this damnable house. No healthy, sane man could live here for long without beginning to lose his sanity, without serious damage to his nervous system. I've never seen such gloom. Inside as well as out, this very room reeks of dejection, despondency, undusted cobweb furnishings, black drapes covering the window. Here, let me throw them back and at least get some moonlight, if not sunlight, into this place. There. That's... Roderick.
What is it?
There's a graveyard. I can see it in the moonlight.
The family graveyard, yes.
Who would be walking in it at night?
What do you say? Where do you see that?
There. Amidst the headstones.
Oh. It's Madeline. What is she doing out there?
Well, we'd better go and find out.
Good Lord.
In the doorway. What is it?
Madeline!
Am I that horrifying to look upon? Dear brother.
Madeline Usher walks among the headstones of the Usher graveyard, yet stands in the doorway at the same time. Does her spirit walk abroad? Is she that close to death? I'll be back shortly with Act Two. Again, I must ask if you wish to go on, and warn that if you do, you will experience a kind of horror for which I can find no words. Even Gabriel Mannering, writing in his diary,
found it difficult to express his feelings in that moment of first meeting with Madeline Usher.
I seek and cannot find words to recreate the terror of that moment. Not a woman, but a corpse stood before us in the doorway of that awful room. The very woman, or corpse, if you will, that but an instant before Roderick Usher and I had glimpsed in a moonlight graveyard beyond the window. If she is alive, I thought, she should be dead. Fatuously, I said, "You are Madeline Usher?"
"Yes."
"How do you do? I'm Gabriel Mannering."
"I know." "Ah, you winced as you took my hand."
"What?"
"You felt its coldness."
No.
"Yes, yes. You need not dissemble with me. Even now you find it hard not to stare at the dark patches on my face, the putrescence that lives." "Yes, thrives in my dying flesh."
"Madeline, my dearest sister, you should be lying down, resting. You mustn't waste your energy."
"I wanted to meet your friend. Someone from the world of life outside this house, this tomb. I wanted to... need it.
She's falling. Catch her."
Put
her on the couch, Gabriel. No. Better still, we'll
carry her to her room. There's no pulse. No heartbeat. Is she...
"Well, heaven help me. It's impossible to say. Can you carry her alone?"
"She weighs nothing."
"Follow me, then." "Oh, what evil stalks the house of Usher! Help us, dear Lord, please help us!"
"Put her down, Gabriel."
"Gabriel?"
"In what? In that? It's her bed. A coffin. Well, nevertheless, it is her bed. It's where she rests and sleeps.
And haven't you noticed what she's wearing isn't a nightdress?"
"A shroud."
"Yes. She's been ready for her burial for nearly a year now." Look. See? Her eyes are fluttering.
"I'd have taken my oath she was dead."
"Not yet. Not yet."
"Gabriel, my friend, come.
Well, you don't leave her like this, alone, no company to cheer her when she wakes."
"She may not waken again for days. She may not waken again. Come."
"No. Oh, wait. There's something about her. Something in her face that reminds me. Well, of course, it's you."
"Oh, you see, then?"
"The family resemblance. Obvious. In spite of what the intimacy of death has done to the face, the resemblance is still there."
"It's more than a resemblance, Gabriel."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, we are twins."
As my friend spoke those words in that chamber of death, a curious change came into his face. It floats before me even now as I write, a complexion gone so suddenly cadaverous, his eyes large, liquid and luminous beyond comparison, thin and pallid lips gone thinner, paler. For a moment, he seemed scarce human. I had tried to calm his fevered nerves by telling him it was his sister, not he, who was dying. And he had cried out...
"You don't understand! You don't understand!"
And now, in an instant, I did understand, or at least the shadow of what he meant touched me, and I was filled with a dread, a loathing of what was to come that I cannot fully express. Had I known the full truth of what lay before us, my loathing would have increased 100-fold, and I should have fled the house of Usher then and there. Certainly, I should not have found myself at breakfast with Usher the following morning.
"Another helping, Mr. Mannering?"
"No more, Cato."
Then I can give you the message."
"A message from whom?"
"Miss Madeline. She wishes to see you at your convenience."
"Well, then I'll go to her, of course. Why do you look at me like that? And now why do you turn away? Cato, face me. Look at me. What is it?"
"Cato, is it The odor.
Yes, sir.
You'd best not go, Gabriel, or if you do, another time.
I don't understand.
The odor, the stench of putrefaction. It's stronger at times than at others.
And you mean that she... Take me to Miss Madeline at once, Cato.
No, no. It will sicken you, nauseate you, even infect you.
Well, it can kill me and be damned to it, but I'll not disregard a last wish of a dying woman. Unlike you, Roderick, I do not fear death. Miss Usher? Madeline? Are you too tired to speak now?
No.
Would you prefer I came back another time?
No. How good of you to come at all.
It's a privilege to be of use to you.
Favor. I wish a favor.
Anything in my power.
I want to die. I'm in such pain and I want to die, but I cannot.
Cannot?
I'm afraid.
There's nothing to fear. Death is only sleep, or dreamless sleep. No, don't fear death.
I don't. I fear.
What? You fear what?
Burial alive.
Why would you have such a fear? What makes you think you might be buried alive?
My mother.
She?
Promise me.
Well, that's part of my fear. Yes.
Only part?
Well, I fear... Oh, God, more than I can tell you. I fear what happens in death.
Another aberration. As with the house, so with this. You are a man given to aberration.
And what of that? You make as little sense as Wyndham. You think because you call a thing an aberration, it'll go away. That it will cure itself if you but name it.
Reason. Common sense.
Reason. Common sense. Well, you speak to me and Usher, of reason and common sense, hmm? Do you not know of the madness that has tainted this family through its history? From the beginnings of the house of Usher, this house, this family... Until now, until Madeline and me, the last of the Ushers, from beginning to end, from rise to fall.
Roderick.
Rise to fall.
Roderick.
From rise to fall. I had not thought on it before, but that is what it will be when she and I are dead. It will be the fall of the House of Usher.
Yes, Cato.
The laudanum, sir, from Dr. Wyndham.
Oh, thank heaven. It has come none too soon.
Mr. Mannering, sir.
What? Oh, yes. Yes, Cato.
You've been sitting here in the graveyard for nearly 2 hours.
That long?
Yes, sir.
Tell me, Cato, how long have you been servant to Mr. Usher?
More than 30 years, sir. But I thought I'd told you that the night you arrived just a week ago.
Did you? Now, then I forgot. Were you here when the mother died? The mother of Mr. Roderick and Miss Madeline?
Why do you ask such a question, Miss Madeline?
I don't know. I don't know, really, except I've been dwelling on what Miss Madeline told me about her mother. Buried alive. Was she indeed?
Sir, don't ask such questions. Don't dwell on such thoughts.
Why not? It was discovered the mother had been buried alive.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Sir, I entreat you. Understand. You cannot stay in the house of Usher. No one can without something. I I know not what, but something evil taking possession of his mind, his spirit, his very soul. It will happen to you. It is happening to you.
No.
You've been drawn here to this spot. You've been sitting here in the damp and chill for hours because you, too, have taken the first step toward madness.
How did they discover she'd been buried alive?
Sir, I beg you, turn your thoughts away from...
How?
If you must hear it. A few weeks after she had been buried, the coffin placed in that vault you see under the trees, it was discovered that she had been buried wearing a valuable ring.
A ring?
It contained a stone worth a fortune. It had been hers. She had always worn it, and when the undertaker encoffined her, he neglected to remove it. He had no idea of its worth, or surely he'd have inquired whether the family wished her to wear it to the grave. And as you will understand, such was Miss Madeline's and Mr. Roderick's grief. They didn't think of the ring until weeks later.
And decided to retrieve it.
Yes. We went to the vault, the three of us. Slid back the slab that covers it and... Sir, let us go in.
Finish. Finish what you're telling me.
There lay the coffin. The lid was in two parts. A lower part that covered her body from the waist down. An upper part from the waist up. This I pried up and... There...
Go on.
She lay face down. Her hands had torn chunks of hair out by the roots. Such was the agony of terror. Hands, do I say? Claws. They had become rigid in the death throes.
Yes. Yes?
We turned her over. Her face, Oh, my God, we with us. Her face, I cannot describe. I cannot.
Enough. Enough, then. Oh, the chill is getting to me.
No!
Madeline!
Quickly, come.
Heaven help us, what is that?
Coming toward us from the house. Roderick!
Help me! Help me!
Roderick! What is it, man?
A corpse!
What?
Madeline, dead. She's dead at last, dead, but...
What? What is it?
She tried to take me to the grave with her. She tried to drag me into her coffin.
No.
Roderick, pull yourself together and tell us.
I went to her chamber to see how she was. I called her name again and again and again, and no answer. I felt for a pulse, none. I lay my head against her breast, no heartbeat, and then... Her arms were entwined around my neck, her cold arms around my neck, and I tried to break free, but I couldn't. I grabbed her wrists and I tore her arms from around me.
Sir, I've got him. Help me carry him inside.
Oh, no.
Now be calm, Cato. When Mr. Usher tore himself free, he must have dragged her half out of the coffin. Come. We must put her back in. Cato.
I dare not touch her.
Very well. There.
Is she at last dead?
She seems so. Ride for the doctor. Tell him to come at once.
Yes, sir. Sir, you mean to stay here?
Yes.
But I will be gone at least 2 hours. Should you change your mind, you'll not be able to find your way back to the library in that maze of corridors.
Now, don't worry about it. I shall stay here. I made her a promise that she'd not be buried alive, and I mean to keep that promise, Cato. Beginning now.
chamber of death, within the house of Usher, Gabriel Mannering seats himself beside the coffin of Madeline Usher to keep his vigil and his promise, and wonders if he himself may not be going mad. I'll be back shortly with Act Three.
This is WBBM Chicago, News Radio 78.
Terror so awful as to shatter the human mind haunts the house of Usher, hangs like a shroud in the air, drips on the spirit like the very slime upon the decaying walls. As Gabriel Mannering sits beside the coffin of Madeline Usher, he feels this terror seeping into him.
Seeping into me like a rising tide of pollution. Cato said he would be gone 2 hours in fetching Dr. Wyndham, but to me, it seemed like 20 before I heard his returning footsteps.
You don't look well.
I'm all right.
Sir, you deceive yourself. Well, never mind now. I'm seeing Miss Usher. My bag, Cato. Thank you. Heart first.
Is she?
No, there's no heartbeat. None whatever. No pulse. No vital signs at all.
She is gone, then.
Hey, Mr. Mannering, I have attended her in this strange illness for nearly a year. I've seen her in this state 4 times before.
What's to be done?
What indeed? Well, I would wait a few days at least, and then I should bury her.
No.
No?
She feared to be buried alive.
Yes, I know. Her mother.
You attended her?
No, another man. From what I've been able to learn, I judge her illness was similar, just as unaccountable and as baffling. Well, Mr. Mannering, she did indeed fear the same fate her mother suffered, but I should think that after, say, 3 or 4 days...
I say no. At least a week. No, 2. Even 3.
You don't know what you're saying. You can't keep a body for 2 or 3 weeks. Especially hers.
Why especially hers?
Well, look at her, man. Here. See? Under the skin of the cheeks. Those gray patches. She's partially decomposed already.
I gave her my word, Doctor. I said we would make sure.
There is an evil in this house. A sinister, malevolent thing that fastened itself on the Ushers years ago. And is beginning to fasten itself on you.
Now, hear me out.
I have not seen you in some days. But the moment I came into this room, I saw it. I tell you, I saw it. The change in you. The sickening in you. I do not use this word lightly, Mr. Mannering. The insanity in you.
You are right. I, too, have sensed, well, no matter. I'm not given easily to fancies either. However, I am given to honoring a promise. I gave Madeline Usher my word she would not be buried alive, and she will not be.
Now, I see that I cannot dissuade you. Very well. Do as you wish. And may God help you.
I stayed by her coffin for yet another hour or so, making sure there were no signs of life. Then I returned to the library, led there, of course, by Cato, for I could never have found my own way through that maze of corridors and passages. I found Roderick Usher seated bolt upright in a wing chair, staring at I know not what. Roderick, I must talk to you. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Now, Roderick, as I told you, I promised your sister to take every precaution against her being buried alive.
She is dead. I know it in my heart, my soul. I know it.
I believe so, too. But we must be certain. Now, that presents a problem. Roderick, are you listening?
Problem?
Yes. Decomposition.
If she is dead, she will decompose. And after a period of days, well, you could imagine...
Days? Days of what?
Of visiting her coffin, at least every 12 hours, say, to make sure she's dead.
Are you mad?
We must keep her body. 1 week, two. And the question is, where?
Where?
We'll have to leave the coffin open in case she should regain her senses. On the other hand, if she is indeed dead, the...
Well, there are vaults deep down beneath the house. We could put the coffin in one of those.
Good, good, good. We'll do that then. Yes, we'll do just that. Together, Usher and I arranged for the temporary entombment of Madeline, his twin. The vault, so long unopened that our torches were half smothered in its oppressive atmosphere, was small, damp, and entirely without means of admission of light, lying at great depth beneath the house.
There. There, Gabriel. It is done.
We must come here again. In no more than 12 hours.
As you say. As you say.
Before he wished only to bury Madeline, why now did Roderick become so compliant, agree so readily with what I said? If only I'd asked myself that question. But I did not, and in consequence faced an unexpected problem.
Why do you not believe me?
It isn't that I don't believe you, Roderick, but I wish to see for myself.
There is no need for you to do it. I have done it.
You have?
I have visited the coffin at least once every 12 hours, sometimes twice. She does not live. Take my word for it.
It is my word that concerns me. I gave my word to her, not yours.
She is dead. I assure you, she is dead.
It was about that time the sounds began. The strange knockings, creaking. Perhaps it had begun before, but I had not heard at first. But I would hear some curious sound from below and say to Roderick, "What was that?"
"What was what?"
"Listen." "What is that?"
"Rats, perhaps." "Rats? Well, you know, the house is infested with them."
"I've never heard rats make sounds like that," I answered. Time went on, and it seemed to me the sounds grew louder, and I would say to Roderick, "Listen." And he would answer.
"A door banging in the wind somewhere."
And I would say, "But there is no wind," and he would answer.
"Well, then it's something else. Don't bother me."
And then on that fatal night, as we sat in the library, he just sitting, staring vacantly at nothing, I trying to read, but my mind focused on that awful chamber of death far below, and outside the wind gathering for a storm, it happened. I became aware of distinct, hollow, metallic, yet muffled reverberation. Completely unnerved, I leaped to my feet and looked at Usher. His eyes were fixed before him, and throughout his whole countenance there reigned a stony rigidity. I said, "Roderick, do you not hear it?"
"Yes, I hear it and have heard it, as you have. Long, long, many minutes, many hours, many days have I heard it. Yet I dared not. I dared not speak. No, no, touch me not. I am accursed, accursed. For I heard the sounds as did you, but I dared not speak and dared not go."
"Not go? My God, are you telling me?"
"That not once have I gone down to see. I dared not. I dared not."
"We put her living in the tomb."
"She comes. She comes for me. Listen. Now listen and know. We've heard the rending of the coffin, the grating of the iron hinges of a prison, our struggles within the carpet archway of the vault, and now, she comes for me. In a moment, she'll be here. I hear her footsteps on the stair. I hear the horrible beating of her heart. She comes for me. She comes. I tell you, she stands
outside the door.
And as if in the superhuman energy of his utterance, there had been found the potency of a spell. The huge antique panels to which he pointed drew slowly back. And outside those doors did stand the towering and enshrouded figure of Miss Madeline. There was blood on her white robes and evidence of some bitter struggle on every portion of her putrefied frame. For an instant, she remained trembling and reeling to and fro upon the threshold. And then, with a moaning cry, fell heavily inward on her brother. And in her violent and now final death agonies, bore him to the floor. A corpse. Victim to the terrors of all he had anticipated.
The manuscript of The Fall of the House of Usher ends thus. I fled from the house, leaving all behind me. As I ran, I heard a sound so horrendous it made me stop and turn. My brain reeled as, looking back, I saw the mighty walls of the house burst asunder. And in a few moments, the moon, breaking through the scudding clouds, a blood-red moon, revealed the end. The Fall of the House of Usher. Our cast included Kevin McCarthy, Arnold Moss, Marion Seldes, and Robert Dryden. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Greg, we've listened to The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. What are your thoughts?
I thought the host, E.G. Marshall, was exaggerating when he intoned at the beginning, "Never will you have experienced such revulsion." Ha! I thought, I've known revulsion. I've watched clips of reality TV shows such as The Bachelor and various Real Housewives episodes. So let me tell you, Mary, I'm hardened to horror. But E.G. Marshall was almost right. The Fall of the House of Usher has all the elements to make you leave on the lights when you finally go to bed and hide under the duvet, as I do.
Yeah, I thought this was actually a really, really good episode. I enjoyed the sort of purgatory, the place between death and life that the House Usher represented. Roderick and Madeline living in this netherworld between death and life in this crumbling house, I thought was beautifully painted by Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes, yeah, so it's that word purgatory is right. And you have to wonder, you know, with Madeline, she's certainly got her problems. Is she cataleptic? Is she dead or alive? Even the doctor can't tell. But here's a pro tip, Madeline. I think your skin could do with a good moisturizer.
Indeed. The notion of rotting while being alive is not an appeal. This is not an appealing concept. or having a coffin bed.
Yes. Well, I hope it's a queen size coffin. And I've got to say that, not only do you get this house, you do get your bed is a coffin. But you get a lovely view of the graveyard. Which is an opportunity to see Madeline cruising the tombstones at night.
Yeah. I was excited when I heard, you know, the butler's name was Cato, because it immediately made me think about the Cato character in the Pink Panther, the houseboy.
Yep. You think that, although the ushers may all be balmy, At least Cato was, slightly sane. But he was, so, you know, and as you mentioned, Inspector Clouseau and the Pink Panther had that loyal and feisty manservant with the same name. Was that a coincidence? I think not.
No, it's a fairly unusual name. So for it to appear in this, in a similar kind of character, I think was obviously when they wrote the Pink Panther, they made a nod to this story.
And in regards to the acting, I enjoyed Kevin McCarthy. He's Gabriel Mannering, or that's the Gabriel Mannering role. And McCarthy was in numerous television series, such as Hawaii 5-0 and Mission Impossible. And when you look at his filmography, it's just amazing. It's just film and TV series after film and TV series. And you have Arnold Moss as Roderick Usher, who chews the microphone, and another of Poe's wonderful characters who display every sign of being psychotic, but are continually screaming, "I'm not mad, I tell you, I'm not mad."
That's right. He's the writer from the episode we did a few weeks ago, The Bottom of the World. So Arnold Moss wrote that sci-fi drama also. That's where I recognized his name.
Yes, a talented man. And also we've got another actor that we've heard before. This is Robert Dryden playing Dr. Wyndham, whose solution to curing every illness is laudanum, which is a mixture of opium and alcohol. And I'm thinking, hey, why isn't my doctor so adventurous with his medications? Why doesn't he prescribe alcohol to me instead of scolding me, as he does on each visit?
I have a theory, actually, that Robert Dryden played two roles in this. I think he was Cato also.
Ah, no, I hadn't thought of that. That's good thinking.
Because if you hear Robert Dryden is in The Horror Story, which we did a few weeks ago on The Shiver Show. In The Horror Story, he plays the main character, the cannibalistic shoemaker. But he also plays the inspector that's investigating the murder. He plays both voices. I think he does this here also.
And he also does house calls, which I think is a plus for any doctor. I'm a big fan of that.
Absolutely. And who wants to visit this house, really? It's not exactly.
No. Well, which is what I thought about Gabriel Mannering. You know, he'd never get a job writing real estate copy to sell houses. When he describes the Usher's home as a tomb that houses the living dead. And when he's inside, Mannering says, "I've never seen such a ruin. The room reeks of despondency."
Oh.
How cheery is that? Meanwhile, he also says that the sister's bedroom reeks of rotting flesh. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if Cato, the manservant, serving blue cheese after dinner? Can you imagine Mannering waving it away and saying, "No, no, I think I'll skip the Rockerford tonight. Thank you, Cato."
I'm visiting Madeline later, so I'll get my fix of mold.
That's right.
So this does sort of highlight how much of an it drug laudanum was in Victorian times, but also, as you had mentioned in a previous episode of The Shiver Show, this fear that Victorians had of being buried alive and how it was prevalent in a lot of the horror writing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still a very disturbing thought at the moment, which is why my plan to be cremated after I go to my reward, and please, there's no hurry, manages to circumvent this issue of being buried alive.
Yeah, instead you're burned alive.
Yes, I wouldn't quite put it like that, Mary, but I can see where you're coming from. I had actually thought of being cremated with a bottle of Irish whiskey in the casket until I thought it would be a rather explosive and certainly a very memorable departure.
Now, make sure you do the job well. Have a bit of accelerant in the mix.
Yes, I wish you wouldn't keep coming back to that. And what about talking about coffins? This is very cheery. Where Mannering says that he's going to inspect Madeline's open coffin for several weeks to make certain she's well and truly passed, as they say. Now, I can see some potential downsides to that plan. I don't know. And then there's this other odd thing about earlier, which, you know, before these scenes are set with Mannering arriving, the family has had this strange outing where Madeline appears to have shouted, "Hey, Roderick, why don't we pop down to the mausoleum and lift the lid off Mother's casket and get at that ring?" I mean, that doesn't sound like it. Doesn't sound a very cheery way to spend the night.
It's a strange family, no question. Greg, I liked the fall of the House of Usher a great deal. I thought it was very suspenseful, even though there's not all that much happening in the story. I thought the acting and just the creepiness of what was going on with Madeline really gave me the shivers.
But certainly a far more compelling narrative than the murders in the Rue Morgue, and much more believable. I mean, murders in the Rue Morgue, where we've got the mad cutthroat razor wielding ape, the orangutan, cutting off people's heads. Now this one, though, we've got a brother and sister who are hovering between life and death. I mean, much more realistic.
And the house. The house is also in on the act.
I believe that you've seen a Netflix series which is based on this.
There is a Netflix series called by the same name, which came out last year. And it's got a reasonably good rating on Netflix. It does, generally follow this plot line, but adds in a whole bunch of children. So the Gabriel Mannering character has... the Madeline character never marries and remains single throughout her life. He has multiple partners and I think 9 children. So the fall of the House of Usher follows the story of what happens to every person in the family, in addition to the brother and sister. So it expands on that a bit. But critics of it say that it doesn't really... follow Edgar Allan Poe's writing very well. But, there's probably a large audience that doesn't care about that.
Could well be.
Well, Greg, any parting thoughts?
Mary, I'm off to see my doctor to see if he can behave more like the wise and patient Dr. Wyndham and prescribe me a medication that, like a good Irish whiskey, is about 80 proof.
That's a perfect plan for the evening, Greg. Greg, we have some listener mail.
Fabulous.
And this message is from Sophie Wins. And Sophie Wins says, "I discovered The Shiver Show on various podcast sites. The horror shows are entertaining in a scary sort of way. Your Maltese Falcon show was a real hit. Can we have more like that? I love the commentaries by Mary and Greg." Love is spelled L-U-V. Oh. "They sound like they are having fun."
Well, thank you very much, Sophie Wins. I've got to say that I like the Maltese Falcon as well. It was it's a prime example of the back in the 40s, they'd have these high-profile movies, such as the Maltese Falcon, where the original cast... then recorded for the public at a public session, they recorded the radio version for charity. A great idea. We certainly giggle and laugh a lot, but after just hours and hours of horror and terror listening to it, there's nothing you need to do more than have a good laugh.
Yep, absolutely. Now, the Sophie, on your comment about more crime, I think that's a really good suggestion. Number one, I just want to say this was the Maltese Falcon was Greg's pick. So you can thank Greg for that. We have another Sam Spade coming up soon, which is with Howard Duff. So instead of Humphrey Bogart, we've got Howard Duff. And I looked through our episodes and saw that we only have 2 crimes so far out of 12. So we do need to up the numbers there. So thank you very much for suggesting that. We will get on that right away.
Yes, I totally approve of all that, because there's film noir, you know, for example, with the Maltese Falcon, and I think you and I are going to reintroduce Mary in radio noir.
Yes, we this is a radio noir show, so everything's in black and white in our world, and we both have fedoras at all times.
Well, that's right. And also the nice thing about black and white is far more flattering.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you, Sophie Wins.
Good night, Mary.
Good night, Greg. That's our show for tonight. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow us on social media, we're out there. You can find The Shiver Show and Time Warp Studios on our website, which is timewarpstudios.com. And there are links to all of our social media there. Music for this show is The Unexplained by Wicked Cinema.